Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a Swangled
in I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. Hey, speaking of Iconic, they've been a home for our show since we started, right around the same time they started as well. We'd like to let you know, they wanted me to pass along a little note that if you are interested in signing up for 10 days for free. There is a link in the show notes. You can just click on that. You can try it out before you buy it. It's like the Netflix of the alternative media, but without, you know, all the pronoun stuff. And if you are so inclined, there's also a really amazing health and wellness component to Iconic. So, hey, check it out. See what you think. There's all of David Icke's work is there, but it's not just that. It's well beyond that. They're doing weekly shows. They're creating their own content. They're making their own movies. It's pretty amazing out there. So check it out. And thank you to our sponsors, to Chemical Free Body. And Tim James has been a part of this show. He's been on multiple times. He's going to be back pretty soon as well. We just scheduled that last night. So he's going to be back to talk to you about health and wellness and all that. If you are interested, you can go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro and you can see the program that he put me through called the Detox in a Box, like a 90-day program. It works. I can't. There's a video. I can't lie. I can't hide the fact that my shorts didn't fit after going through that program. And I'm in pretty good shape. But after doing that, it leaned me out in a way that I was not expecting. So look, we got to take control of our health. The best way to do that is to start thinking about this logically. Go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro and just read. Just read up on it. See what he's doing. He's got the best products out there. And use your promo code MACRO on the way out to save yourself a couple extra bucks as well. And I feel like I'm beating a dead horse. But at the rate we're going, you may be looking forward to eating a dead horse if they continue to cut the supply chain. So My Patriot Supply has been nice enough to create a landing page for us called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. You can take a look at that and see what they've got. They've got a 4-week supply of emergency food. They have 3-month supply of emergency food with discounts on both of those. Get it now. They're already starting to experience delays, but you probably want to be early rather than late when it comes to this. Regardless, if you don't purchase through my sponsors, pick up some extra food next time you're at the store, slowly start accumulating a nice little stockpile. We're going to need it. We've got supply chain issues happening in America. We have supply chain issues with shipping in China. We have food processing facilities just up and exploding or getting crashed into by planes. I am beyond the point of coincidence with this. I think that this is orchestrated. It certainly is suspicious. You don't want to be late. You're better off to be 2 months early than 2 days late. So take control of this. Go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and just spend 10 minutes on there and get yourself sorted out. Get yourself and your family sorted out so that you don't have to get into some sort of hand-to-hand combat with some moron in the frozen food aisle when the food runs out. I'm excited to have this guest because in the Union of the Unwanted, we've had him on several times. You will know him as the Google whistleblower that blew up on Project Veritas, but he's got more. He's also the founder of Blast Up Video. Zach Voorhees is here. Hey, Zach, good to see you again. How you doing, man?
Hey, Charlie. Thank you for having me on your program.
Well, thanks for coming on. Let's start from the beginning. And you might be tired of telling this story, but I listened to it in detail when you explained what happened to you at Google. And for those out there that don't know, I think it's important to understand where you're coming from so that they will understand why you're doing what you're doing now with Blast.Video. So let's talk about what happened at Google, when that was. Let's talk about the insane tactics that they used, calling a SWAT team to your house. I don't want to spoil it. Fill us in on how this all started and what Google was doing.
Yeah. So, Google used to be like this libertarian company. Their first constitutional, point was to don't be evil. And the second was to organize the world's information, make it universally accessible and useful. And that was something that I really agreed with. And I really liked the company. It was really great when I started in 2008, all the way into 2016, when they basically just flipped 180 degrees due to the wrong presidential candidate winning the presidential election. And that was Donald Trump. And what I didn't realize was that Google was about to lose their collective minds and go absolutely insane. And that's essentially what happened. I remember waking up the morning of November 5th, I believe. When was the election? 2016? November 4th, right?
Yeah.
So November 4th, I woke up. November 5th, I woke up and I remember sort of laughing to myself going, wow, this is, a loss of the left that they haven't had in a really long time. Like they've had a string of successes with Obama. They seem to have been able to get their agenda. Now it's time to share that power a little bit and let the conservatives have their little, bit of time to run the government. And what I didn't realize is that the left had different plans, and specifically Google brought it upon themselves to define the presidential win via Russia hacking the election, right, essentially, and a bunch of fake news. And I was like, really? This is what you guys think? And it was. And right after Trump got elected, there was like this really famous all hands meeting that happened 1 week after the election. And it was people like the CFO, the CEO talking about how they were going to lose this election, recounting how led up to it. And one of the interesting things that was asked by one of the employees was what some of the effective things that Google had done during the election, to which the CEO replied that it was the use of machine learning fairness in order to censor the news. And for me, it was like, wait a minute, what? Like, when have we been defining fake news and when have we been censoring it? And so, Charlie, I started digging into the company and trying to figure out, what is the definition of fake news for Google? Now, Google's an open company. Eric Schmidt built it that way. You can figure out what everyone else in the company is working on, their OKRs, their objective and key results, their little badges that we have at the company, what their code reviews look like, everything. You can get full transparency in all the employees. Well, it turns out that the there was a fake news team, and the fake news team was delivering all of their documents that were searchable for any full-time employee to just stumble upon and see, which is what I did. And as I started looking through the definition of fake news, I started to realize that it had a lot to do with Hillary Clinton. In fact, out of the five examples that they used, four of them happened to be about Hillary Clinton. And so I was like, well, wait a minute. Is this about the fake news, or is this about putting your finger on the scale of the election and affecting the election outcome? So I started to get suspicious. I dug in a little bit further. I found out that this fake news definition was being used to generate training data for a secret Google project for censorship, which was called Machine Learning Fairness. Machine Learning Fairness is a merging between artificial intelligence and critical race theory. Ooh. And once I saw this, I knew, okay, this is the real censorship engine. It's not Project Dragonfly. Like, that was almost like a fake project, in my opinion. And it coincidentally, they ended Project Dragonfly the same month that I, within 30 days of me blowing the lid on Machine Learning Fairness. And they had this nice sort of Marxist name, like, fairness, like if you're against it, you're against fairness and you want an unfair world. But when I looked through the documents of this Machine Learning Fairness, I could tell that what they were trying to do was reshape the perceptions of people's understanding of the world. And that even objective reality could be algorithmically unfair and justify correction via product intervention. And their hope was to remake the world in this, fair and equitable place. That's their words. And that they felt that they had a responsibility and the power to do that sort of re-ranking of the entire world's information. And I was like, holy smokes, this is really awful. But I didn't, like, when I first saw this, it wasn't my intention to like leak it. I pretty much just saved all these documents as PDFs to the laptop to sort of ground myself into like what was actually happening. Because look, like it seemed crazy at the time that this corporation was going to turn totally dystopian. And so, you know, whenever something like this happens, you know, the first thing someone should do is say to themselves, wait a minute, is the whole world going crazy or am I going crazy? Because there's a lot of people that think that the world's going crazy when it's really them going crazy. And so I started to think to myself, well, maybe I'm just going crazy. And I'm like in the beginnings of some sort of schizophrenia because it can't possibly be this abrupt. They couldn't possibly lie to us this entire time. And it couldn't be that the entire media apparatus was covering for them so that they could have this like, you know, coup on the planet. Right. You know, it's much more likely that I'm going crazy in the head. So just to make sure that I'm not going crazy, I'm going to start downloading these documents. So I start downloading these documents one at a time to PDF. Thank God to the Chrome team for creating this Save as PDF feature. That's how I exfiltrated all of the documents. And once I got it, you know, on my laptop, they just sort of sat. But then what I saw was Google violating all these sort of like moral red lines that I thought that they would never cross, right? Like censoring YouTube, because YouTube literally, its name is YouTube. And they started treating it like their tube. And it wasn't until like, it was this 2017 all hands meeting called the Stream Conference, in which the CEO, Susan Wojcicki of YouTube went up and stated that, yes, indeed, they were going to filter the fake news, that they were going to boost the authority of content. And I realized that, yeah, they're serious. This is the beginning of a totalitarian conversion of the company. They're laying down the groundwork now for us employees to accept this and normalize what they're about to do. And what's really funny is that, like, after she gave this whole speech, she had this one of the executives, you know, in the media come out and talk about like, oh, well, you know, what should we do about fake news? And his answer was really amazing because, like, at that time, I was fully aware that fake news was a tool of the establishment. So this guy came and he was just like, actually, you can't get rid of fake news. It's actually a lot more complex of a topic than you think. And he said this directly to the CEO, like basically contradicting her entire, like, you know, thesis of her speech.
Right.
And I was laughing to myself because I was like, yeah, fake news is a complex concept because the mainstream media is engaging in it at all time. You know, for example, the Russian collusion hoax against Donald Trump. Oh, Putin hacked our election. No, like it was leaked by Seth Rich and, you know, all that nonsense about Russia hacking the election. Like they never produced any sauce. Like at the beginning, I was like, okay, well, maybe Russia did hack the election. I'm just going to wait for the evidence because obviously they're going to give the evidence if 17 different intelligence apparatuses are all telling us the same thing, that Russia hacked the election. And then the evidence came out and it was like some port scanning of, like, you know, stuff like that happens as soon as your computer gets connected to the internet, gets port scanned, right? Mm-hmm. So they were taking this like port scanning as like evidence that Russia was like trying to hack the election. And it's just like, this is the evidence that like 17 intelligence agencies were doing. So I was very, very familiar with fake news. They were committing it. And so for them to use this as a justification that they had to like rework the entire internet and boost authoritative content and, like, you know, like this was going to be an easy problem to solve was ludicrous. I knew exactly what they were doing. But I didn't really get committed to blowing the whistle until I saw, sort of the ramifications of this Covfefe tweet, which, if you remember, Trump came back and said, despite the negative constant press, Covfefe. And then the next day, the New York Times wrote a hit piece on the word Covfefe. And then that same day, Google created a design document saying, hey, the New York Times is saying Covfefe is a nonsense word. But unfortunately, we translate it from our Arabic to English translation dictionary to we will stand up. And so they literally deleted the word Covfefe from the Arabic translation dictionary because the New York Times said that it was nonsense. And therefore, what Trump was tweeting was nonsense and probably due to his mental incapacity. And so they were going to try to use the 25th Amendment to remove the sitting president from the United States. Now, when I'm watching this, Charlie, I'm thinking to myself, I'm now part of this conspiracy, right, to overthrow the president and the United States. So, you know, I saved that as PDF, obviously. And then I started putting in the groundwork to let everyone know that this machine learning fairness was the thing that was censoring everyone. And I got it out there to Project Veritas, who launched the Sting investigation. And it was their biggest story, that they've ever had. And they actually changed their business model to be a whistleblower pipeline. Because of the success of the story, and it helped spawn a successive wave of whistleblowers for big tech.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for the last 2 years, I've been part of the ranks of people that have been complaining about big tech censorship, but I wanted to be actually one of the people that was going to fix big tech censorship. And so what I did is, you know, about 9 months ago, I started a new project called blast.video, which was going to be a cross-platform aggregation engine, which is basically the YouTube recommendation app, but across like BitChute and Rumble and Brightdown and all these other services, right? Like, it goes out there, it's a spider, it goes, it collects all this information, it brings it back into one single place, and then boom, we've got all of our conservative leaders like all in the same place. Conservative, conspiracy, whatnot. I've got a pretty low bar of entry. If you're like, you know, kind of hunted by big tech, then I want to know what your content is. But no deep Q accounts or anything. Like, you can mention Q, but like, if you think that like there's this secret, like, Austin Steinbart, like, how close, if people are too close to Austin Steinbart, then, you know, it's, they're not going to find a home on blast.video. But other than that, like, legitimately free speech and people that are probably not intelligence assets definitely have a home on blast.video, because ultimately what I wanted to do is I wanted to create a sense making, system, right? Like, why are we all addicted to the Twitter hive mind? Because we want to know what the aggregate thinks. We want to make sense of the world. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to recreate that experience with the video platforms, and make that so people didn't have all this friction for all these content creators that they wanted to access. And so, you know, that's,
you've done a great job with it too, by the way. And we're going to get into that. I think that for people that want to check it out, they'll find that, the content that is shown there is the type of content you're probably out there looking for. But before we get onto that too deep, I want to go back real fast and talk about what was happening at Google. Now, was this directive coming from Eric Schmidt? Was it Sergey and Larry? Was it venture capital? Like, who was making the call on this pivot in 2016 towards basically destroying the corporate culture of Google, the don't be evil? Obviously, at that point, we're talking about a market cap of hundreds of billions of dollars in worth of Google. We've got the two co-founders and Eric Schmidt worth, you know, I mean, the $100 billion each. Eric Schmidt worth what, $30 billion? I mean, there's a lot at stake here, and you run the risk of tanking your stock price and wiping out your own net worth. Not that they could ever really ever cash all that stuff in, but. There had to have been, there obviously was, a decision made. Who made the decision? Do we know?
The media. Like, it was the media. It was like, it's like this groupthink system, right? Like, the media comes out and they're like, oh, Russia hacked the election. Oh, there's fake news. Oh, Pizzagate's fake. You know, and then what happens is that the C-level executives, they react to that news, right? And they have these like big meetings, because it doesn't come from like an authority figure, and it's not like some guy just announces it and then we all fall in line. It's more like, oh, look, here's this big problem by the media. Let's have a discussion about it, right? And then, you know, maybe they field the particular questions that they want. I don't really know how it works, but certain people seem to have been selected to go and talk about their grievances of fake news and all this kind of stuff. And they're like, yeah, this is a real big problem. Thank you for bringing that up. We're going to like investigate and get back to you about how we're going to fix this situation. And one of the really interesting things is that there was a very vocal minority within Google that was every single week that we had this like all hands meeting, this vocal minority was like, the straight up Nazis, like, how are we going to deplatform all these? Like, and they were calling everyone else Nazis, right? They're like, why are we platforming Nazis in their hate speech? And this group that was doing this was specifically the transgender, male to female group. And it's weird. I wish I could say that it was like, you know, a mix of transgender, but it was only pretty much the majority was one group. It was these transgender groups. The imposter women were going up there and just airing their toxicity, and Google management and the C-level executives were like, oh, we're trying to do better to get hate off our platform, right? It was always this reaction to what these like people without power were saying.
Right.
And I always thought that it was really weird that they were just listening to this minority week after week, but it seemed to sucker in my coworkers, because they were buying into it hook, line, and sinker. They thought that Trump was going to have like some sort of like, I don't know, a transsexual death squad car that was going to go around and like, you know, whatever like ridiculous fiction they had in their heads. Yeah. And so, yeah, they bought into it. So it was like a manufactured consensus that came in that basically captured the whole company up in this nonsense and brought them into this totalitarian state.
I would say it's not limited to Google. We're seeing that at Disney. We're seeing that at Twitter. We're seeing that at Netflix and all the hardcore left leaning, obviously Bay Area. I'm from California as well. Very liberal state. I'm from Palm Springs, which has the second biggest gay community aside from San Francisco. So, you know, I'm used to the gay community being involved and integrated within, but this is not the gay community. This is a fringe subset. I think the gay community, by and large, would distance themselves from these people. This is a very militarized woke form of wokeness that is, it's poison to a company, right? Did you, I mean, it, this had to have been like a, you had to have been watching this feeling like you're watching someone drip poison into the pond and just infect everybody. Yeah, it starts small and maybe you're not going to be affected, but at some point you keep adding that poison, everybody's going to be impacted by it. Did you, is that what happened to Google? You feel like you, there was a, like
it was like they were passing out the Kool-Aid and they were wanting everyone to drink it. And it was like, as they drank it, it just poisoned everything with it, just made it suck. Right. Yeah. Like what are some of the examples? Like we were going to hit like some OKRs within YouTube. Like I think it was like 4 billion watch hours in a month or something like that. Right. And the YouTube CEO was like, quite frankly, in 2017, she's like, yeah, we're not going to hit that due to moderation attempts that we're doing. And I was like, oh, so you're kicking people off and now you're not going to hit your OKRs, but yet we're still going to push even more radical censorship onto the platform. So that was, they just went in and poisoned themselves. And, you know, it's like, go woke, go broke. Like I saw that happen with the company. And it was miserable. It just made everyone's lives miserable on that. But all the leftists wanted to do it because they were so afraid of Donald Trump.
Wow. But they're acting against their own self-interest, right? So if you hit these target numbers, or if you have more view hours, or if you have more people contributing to YouTube, theoretically, stock price goes up, everybody wins, right? But they didn't want that. They were content to submarine the growth of YouTube by deplatforming people and not hitting their quotas, not hitting the measurables that the company wanted them to, just to silence any sort of dissent, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Man, that's crazy. So you blow the whistle on this, right? So you go and how do you get in touch with Project Veritas? How does that whole thing work? Do you reach out? I know that they have kind of, I mean, I don't know how it was when you first did it, because you really sort of put them on my radar, but they now they're pretty open. Like if you work in one of these companies and you know something that we need to know, like let us know. But back then, was that, you said that wasn't really their business model. How'd they get in touch with you?
Well, actually, I got in touch with them, and it was through an indirect way, because I was like, who am I going to be able to, talk about all this that's going on? Like, what newspaper would take this in? Like, if I went to the New York Times, they would probably just tell Google, and that would be the end of Zaki.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, maybe it's better if it comes out in another country where Google doesn't have as much lobbying, and they're a little bit more hostile. So I was like, well, the polls seem pretty, the Polish people seem pretty based. And so I started reaching out to Polish people, and then one thing led to another, and I got in touch with Matt Tierman, who was sitting on the board of directors for Project Veritas and Breitbart. And he was like, well, this isn't going to work for Breitbart because it's too big of a story. We need to like do it justice. I think this is something for Project Veritas. He steered it to there. Project Veritas sent me, I guess you'd call it a handler. Like someone to like handle the information from me and gain my trust. And he was very gentle and didn't try to push anything. And, I was scared. And so eventually I was just like, okay, sure. I'll give you all the information. And so, it got exfiltrated to, Project Veritas's hands. And then surprisingly, nothing happened for like a year and a half. And then, I think what happened was it was too extreme, and Project Veritas had suspicions that it was not verifiable, that it was fake. But when they eventually did an investigation in 2019, they ended up in a conversation with one of the engineers of machine learning fairness. And he basically spelled out the thesis of what I was telling them. And so they're like, oh, okay, well, that's been verified now. Let's do like a larger operation. And they did a larger operation. They got Jenjin Ai, one of their like AI directors, to go into a Mexican restaurant under false pretenses and record her after a few drinks, saying that only something the size of Google could stop the next Trump situation. And so it was like, whoa, like this is obviously like election meddling. They're stating their intention. And so that video was released at the same time that the sort of that my disclosure came out. So I was anonymous. This happened in June. I came out to Project Veritas. I resigned from Google. And I got behind this, anonymous thing, and they interviewed me, and it was like the largest story ever. And it was because of that Gen Genie bust they got, which was the really explosive part that made it all real. Because, you know, it's like one guy can say anything, right? Like, right. I could be disgruntled. I could have a chip on my shoulder. I could be a liar. You don't know. It's anonymous, but it was the fact that it was testimony telling everyone what they already knew, plus the evidence from Twitter, YouTube, or Google's own executive that tied it all together and made it real. We also, Charlie, released a few pages from the 950 that I collected. The most important one was the four-step process of which Google said that they were going to program their user base. And the way that they did it was control the information on Google search. And the fourth step was people like us are programmed, and then it like recycles on itself. Like those people generate new content, then it's filtered, ranked, and out, you know, and re-ranked. And then, you know, the final step is people like us are programmed. And so we caught them. We let the whole world know. It was a huge uproar. And then I was like, okay, well, I've done my thing. I'm super proud of myself. And I didn't even let anyone know who I was, so I can go back into Silicon Valley and, you know, start my life over again without all this baggage. But unfortunately, Google came after me. They tried to get access to my personal information. Like, what do you have? We need to investigate. And I knew what they were doing. They tried to get the evidence so that they could, you know, come up with some criminal or civil case. So I said, no.
What was your title at Google?
Senior software engineer.
Okay.
So I did C++ for the YouTube app, and I brought it to the PlayStation 4, Xbox, and Nintendo Switch. And when I left, our team was generating around 10% of the total traffic to YouTube.com. So pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So,
Anyone have any suspicions about you? Clearly you're like,
oh yeah.
You're more conservative leaning than the people there. But listen, I mean, everybody's more conservative leaning than the people there. I would assume. I mean, it seems to me like it's really hardcore left.
But they're all brainwashed there.
Yeah, it's, were you?
Yeah, I stuck out like a sore thumb. I almost kind of went schizoid, because like when I worked at, you know, Google in the prior years, I was always eating lunch with people. But then once this like coup went down, and I realized that all my coworkers were like uniquely brainwashed by it, I was like, I do not want to have lunch with anyone, because all I could think about and all I could listen was these YouTubers talking about this, like all this fake news happening in the media. I knew that if I started to speak up, that I would give myself away. So I got really scared because I didn't want to give myself away. And so I just ate lunch alone, like, you know, at, you know, lunch ends at 2 o'clock at the YouTube office. So I would leave my desk at 1:50, get to the cafeteria at 1:55, and then, you know, load up a huge plate of salad, like a bowl of salad, and go to town listening, you know, continuing listening to YouTube. And I realized that I could get outed really easily if I made too much noise, because, look, they're logging everything that I do. They're probably looking at the YouTube pages and storing it. They just aren't analyzing it. And if I got too uppity and they launched an investigation, I realized that I could be outed really quickly. And then, you know, something bad could happen and no one would have known what I was doing up to that point, except a handful of people. So I was really kind of keeping it on the low key as much as I could.
Yeah.
And did my best to not give myself away. But I did have a couple mess ups where I did get politically active within the company, and HR was called in a few times, and I was able to resolve it peacefully. When the whistle was being blown, Google knew exactly who it was right away. And that's usually why they came after me, because they knew that I was the whistleblower.
And they came after you.
Yeah. And I got swatted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. That's crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, it was like, it was August 2019. Google was coming after me with their law firm. I was getting like hit by, anonymous trolls online that were outing who I was as the whistleblower. And we actually found out that the people that were harassing me were actually coming from Google themselves. Like it was, we like set up a trap for them where they, we put up a link to a image that was hosted on a server that we controlled. And so when they clicked on the link, we captured their IP address and we mapped it back to the Google Indiana office. And so I was like, okay, well, this is definitely Google coming after me now. And so I wrote up this like, so I called up James O'Keefe and I said, hey, the heat's getting on me. If I die for some reason, and I give you full permission to release absolutely everything. And then I went to Twitter and I announced this Deadman switch saying that Deadman switch is now active. In the event of my untimely death, all documents will be disclosed to the public. And so they were monitoring my Twitter and as they were. And so within, like a few hours, there were police knocking on my door, trying to get me to come out. And I pretended that I wasn't there. They saw a bottle of denatured alcohol in a tin can in a bag. And they were like, oh, this could be an incendiary device. Better call the bomb squad. So the bombs got called in. And because that got called in, the FBI, the SWAT team and a bunch of other, you know, law enforcement agencies, and they staked out. They blocked off the road from 20th and Valencia to like 22nd Valencia. My neighbors had to evacuate. The corner store had to evacuate. Jeez. And I didn't realize any of this was taking place. I just knew that police staked out in front of my house. And then, I was just like, I'm going to hide in one of the inner rooms in my flat. And so I was in there and then I heard like a helicopter hovering really close to my house. And then I realized that there was a second one. And I was like, these helicopters are too close to be, you know, coincidental. I don't think it's a homicide that happened near. I think they're coming here for me. And then I crawled out and I looked up and there's this like helicopter, like outside the window, like, you know, maybe 50 to 100 feet above, like looking down. And I'm like, oh shoot, did they just see me? And so, I realized that they were going to come in and it was either they were going to come in and maybe they would do some sort of funny business, or I could come out and show myself to them with everyone filming the situation. And so I decided that the second was going to be the better option because Look, if something's going to happen, like all these people are going to have video on their cameras, like you're not going to get that off. So I went outside, the first attempt I went to go outside, there were bomb robots in the way and I had to wait for them to clear these two bomb robots.
Jesus.
And then I came out, and I had like my hands up, but they allowed me to have my cell phone in my hand. I said, I'm going to have a cell phone in my hand. It's not going to be a gun. Is that okay with you guys? And they were like, yes, thank you for letting us know. And so I let them know that I was about to come out and, you know, they detained me. They asked me a bunch of questions about my mental health. You know, like, do you have any intention of harming yourself or anyone else? Should you be on medication? Yada, yada, yada. I answered truthfully to all those and they're like, okay, well, why does Google want, why do they call this wellness check on you? And I went, aha, I knew it was Google. Ooh. And I said, well, maybe because I blew the whistle on their censorship regime. And look, the cops hear a whole bunch of like really crazy stories and they're like, do you have any proof that you've done this? And I said, yeah. And I said, I've actually taken a picture of the letter that I sent to the Department of Justice. So I got the letter. And, I showed it to them and they saw it and the cops were like, oh, okay, this actually is a whistleblower thing. So, it de-escalated. They were really friendly to me after that. And then the next day I was in Washington, D.C. in a safe house getting ready to, release everything through Project Veritas. And that's what we did on August 14th, 2019. So mid-August 2019, we released everything, all 950 pages. And now everyone kind of got the blueprint for how Google did their censorship algorithms, and how they did the re-ranking and how they did the blacklist. Like, here's the funny thing. They testified to Congress that they didn't have any blacklists, but I could just do a search for a blacklist. And I found the blacklist like immediately, and it was literally named blacklist.txt. Right? So it was just gross lying and perjury that they were doing to the American people. And this was a contradiction to the American, you know, ideal and the end of the republic if no one was going to do anything. And boom, man, did it resonate. Project Veritas's largest story, you know, it spawned a whole wave of big tech whistleblowers. And now, as of yesterday, Elon Musk owns Twitter, assuming that all the paperwork goes through. Yeah. And
do you see the Babylon Bee? They put out a thing that said Elon Musk Twitter takeover denied at the last second after 130,000 board of director votes were found at midnight at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it's great. I don't doubt that. I think that's
well, the reason why I wanted you to tell the story of how insane this is because I think it's important for people to understand when you create blast.video. It's not just something you're working on. Like, the roots of this are pretty personal to you. I mean, you had your life almost destroyed. Had it not been for the Project Veritas guys that had your back and sort of amplified your voice, they would have tried to put you in a psych ward. I mean, those questions about your mental state and all those things. Not accidental, obviously. You know, when they send you on a wellness check, that they want to try and put you in a situation where they can deem you as being insane and all the things that and hide you away legally that way. So I think it's just important for people to understand where you're coming from. This isn't like some project that you've started just for fun. Like, this means something to you. This is like your life's work, right?
It definitely is. Like, I joined YouTube. Within Google, I joined the YouTube office because I thought that content creators were basically the digital version of the Gutenberg printing press. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be part of this like revolution. I wanted to help drive it forward. I was like obsessed with this, and performing well with my OKRs. I just wanted you guys to be able to like speak, and I wanted to be part of that. And for them to crush that, was essentially gave me PTSD. Like, when I see the things about PTSD, like, I'm like, this is definitely what applies to me. Part of that story is also, there was a mass shooter that came to my office that opened fire. And I saw the dead body, and I was one of the first to talk to the media about it. This was in April of 2018. So, like, my whole worldview has been shattered by what's transgressed with YouTube and Google. Like, on the other hand, I wisened up and I'm like, well, of course they lie to everyone. That's what the ruling class does, right? And I was just naive to think that they weren't doing it now because I bought into the consensus, the groupthink. And so, you know, growing is hard. It sucks. It's painful. But it's necessary. And so in order for me to sort of like come around full circle and complete the hero's journey, I had to come back to the place that I had started when I started this whole venture and, be working on a video platform, but one that was truly there to amplify the voice of the people and not one that was controlled by this big tech monopoly. And that's the reason why I did, you know, blast.video is to preserve the fire of, you know, free speech, intellectual freedom and to remove all the friction from the audience in order to find content creators like you, Charlie.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I really like it. I like the way you've laid it out. So for those, everyone that's listening to this, go check it out, blast.video.
And can we show it? Can you do the share screen kind of like bringing up one of your things?
Probably not on this, and I'm not tech savvy enough to do it, but I'll have links in the description for people to find it. But the categories that you have there, you have trending, independent, populist, mainstream, health, and news. And it's great. You can just click through all of them. You'll get a different feed of different videos coming in this way. But the part one of the parts I like probably the most is the news feature. Because now you're pulling in content from a variety of different places. Like, as an example, I'm looking Children's Health Defense, Epoch Times, We Are Change, Breitbart, InfoWars, OAN, Zero Hedge, Rebel News, News Punch, a lot of the natural news, a lot of this stuff. These are sites that I'll go to, SGT Report, SHTF Plan. These are places I'll go to during the course of the day. And what's nice about this is that you've kind of just aggregated all in one spot. So I can just go one place and I can see a variety of stories and click there. Yes, I want to see this one or this one. I just like the way it's visually. I like the way it's laid out. It makes sense. It works for me. When did this launch?
This launched on March 29th. It's being funded by, the users. I wanted to be funded by the users so that I didn't have the pressure of like doing ads. Or, trying to beg like some angel for money. Like, and that's what's happening right now is I'm fundraising at, we're almost at 9,000 right now. And the goal of this is to have a really great news experience that is, the best place for news on the internet 24/7. And it's not just like a slogan, right? Like, you hear a lot of people, they do the whole slogan, oh, we're the best place for news. Like, no, literally, I was obsessive with creating this thing so it could be the best place for news. And because of that, you see what it is right now. It's a replacement for the YouTube recommendation app as it used to exist for conservatives. And it turns out that the more you go into a niche, the easier it is to create a great user experience on that. Like, YouTube's like, oh, it's like the place to go for cooking and, learning how to program and, like, depending on what videos you do, it'll reconfigure itself to recommend the videos that you like.
Yeah.
Where people are coming to Blast.Video video specifically to see what's trending in conservative news on the internet.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it's just conservative news to me. It feels like there's a lot of like middle of the road content here too. I mean, I don't consider myself to be necessarily a conservative. I feel like the left went so far left that by comparison, I appear to be standing on the right hand side. I probably am a little bit more right than I am left these days, but that they forced me there. but I look at this and I don't, I wouldn't even have considered this to necessarily be conservative news. I just consider it to be real news.
Yeah.
And that, of course, nowadays, the more conservative news is the real news because the loony left has taken control of this. But they've shot themselves in the foot. It's such a strategic blunder on their part to take the news and just bastardize it, because nobody will trust them from this point on. Once you break out of that bubble, whether on the coast, everyone seems to be in this bubble. But look, there's a whole lot of people in the middle of this country and they don't buy that stuff. They're not into that. And they see right through it. So they're desperate for it. Where can I go to find this? We're going to just go to find news. I don't even care. I don't need a slant. Just give me something. Yeah, maybe this is a little bit more conservative leaning, but I'll take that. I can figure it out myself. But I like what you've done. I wish you didn't have to go through what you went through to have this epiphany and to create this company, because they put you through hell, obviously. But I'm glad you did it, because I think that this is desperately needed. Is there a way people can, I'm sure people can contribute to this? Is there?
Yeah, blast.video/support. Like, if people think this is the best place for news 24/7, then support me at blast.video/support. It's going to redirect you to the give, send, go page, throw a penny in the tip jar. It really adds up and it's what's funding me right now. You know, I pretty much like, I used to be rich, working for Google, making $250,000 a year. Now I'm living in a life of poverty, but I wake up and I love what I do every single day. It's so worth it. I'm now rich in a different way, you know, but I am needing the donations in order to keep this project alive through the, you know, through at least the midterm elections. You know, we're going to see what's going to happen after that. I want to keep this alive through 2024. But it takes work to put in features. I'm expecting that there's going to be some censorship as maybe YouTube shuts down the RSS feeds, which I use to get a lot of these content creators. So, you know, I'm looking for the funds in order to keep this alive. And I pretty much cut all of the expenses out of my life in order to like be able to bring this to you, because that's how important it is. Like we got to keep this revolution of the mind going forward, and we can't let these people that lie and cheat and are criminals to take our country without a fight.
Right.
And I think that it's really interesting that, you know, that like I launched this on March 29th and now it's, on April 25th. That's when Elon bought the company, bought Twitter. So,
right.
You know, it's kind of like I've got this like little thought, like, what if I'm living in a simulation? Because it feels like I do something and then the whole world sort of like comes in like right after it. Like, you know, like I blew the whistle and then like all these other big tech people came out and blew the whistle, you know, and now I released this free speech thing and then Elon Musk buys Twitter. So, I know that's just crazy that I'm not the center of the universe, but you always have to wonder, like, are we all living in our own personal simulation?
But so, there is one thing I hope that there's yet another thing that you could be a pioneer of as well. And this is one of the cool features on blast.video is the clipping. You just talked about, you know, cutting away all of your expenses. Talk about the clipping feature videos. Cause this is what I say. We may have a third thing where it's like a month later, everyone started offering this crazy clipping feature. I wonder where they found that from. They probably found it from you, right?
Dude, it's popping up everywhere now. It's like YouTube. They've got like a download feature. Odyssey's got like a download feature. I know that I've gotten the interest of a lot of these other companies like Rockfin and all this. Like I'm actually in talks with them. And they are seeing the value of RSS feeds. They see the value of being able to download a video and create clips. And all those video downloaders on the internet are now breaking. They don't exist anymore for whatever reason. And so what I've done is I've created the best video clipper on the internet. It's free to use. And it's also tied into every single video that's on blast.video. You'll see at the lower right-hand corner of every video, a little tiny word that says clip. You click the clip button and it's going to bring you to the clipper, the video clipper. It's going to give the URL and then like some timestamps. So, you know, because people want to save video to Twitter and Twitter has this 2-minute, 20-minute limit. So, you know, it's all about being able to find those clips from the internet and then use that to promote on other sites. And this is one of the great features that blast.video has. I hope that other people will see the value of this and integrate it into their video hosts as well. Because look, this content wants to be free. We're living in another Napster moment, right? Like Napster was sharing of illegal content. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to share content that wants to be free. Yeah. Right. And hopefully other people will see the value in that and copy it for these other platforms.
Man, I'll tell you, I don't know how many times I've been watching a video. It's just like an hour long video. And there's a spot right in the middle. And I go, that's what I want. To have the ability to just go clip and just clip that little piece out and take that, download it, and then put it wherever. You didn't invent the wheel. You just made it better.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the people that like my show probably, you know, watch a lot of videos and things like that. They'll find use for it. I mean, it's certainly it's certainly useful. What's the future for Blast Out Video? If we get you guys all over the place, everybody knows about you guys. Where do you think this can go? Is there a component where you can do this for podcasts? Where do you think the future lies with stuff like this?
I'm trying to decentralize everything. So right now I've got like 5 video platforms that I can pull data from. They use a combination of RSS or web scraping to get that content. But what I really want to do is I want to be able to take an RSS feed from individual contributors and be able to use that to get their videos. And I also want to integrate the ability for, IPFS video embeds, which I think is amazing technology. Like you just upload your video to the internet and then the swarm takes care of distributing it to your people. I think that that's really exciting and a way to create an uncensorable internet for a lot of content. And I think that that's really going to be the future. My big goal is to get up to 100,000 daily active users. Right now, we're about 5 of that, but we've got 95% to go. But we want to get to 100,000 users, and then eventually, the long-term impact is that we could get to the size of the Drudge Report, which had 24 million daily active users at its height. And I think that Blast.Out Video could hit something similar to that, especially if we start opening up the aggregation to other social media platforms. One of the hits right now is the fact that Twitter, even though I'm very much in support of them going back to the way that they were under Elon Musk, I still understand that, Twitter opening up has really improved the free speech in America. And so, that may hurt, my prospects a little bit, but you know what? My thing isn't to make money. It's to save free speech and to set an example. Like, I open source my trending algorithm. I open source my inclusion list of who I pull from. And I put it out there when I launched. I said, I'm doing this as, to show other companies how it should be done. And it's like, almost a month later, Elon Musk comes out. He's buying Twitter. He's going to open source their trending algorithm. And it's just like, whoa, like I was ahead of that curve by an entire month.
The pendulum is swinging back the opposite way in a big way. It has gone woke and gone broke, and it is coming back the other direction. People are sick.
Let the salt flow, right? I've never seen these authoritarians so triggered by the ability for people to have free speech. Now they're arguing that anonymous bot accounts need to exist in order to protect our democracy. It's like they're so morally bankrupt and vacant that. It's like, if you don't see it right now, it's just like you are maximally an NPC. Like, it is just insane. The double standard, the hypocrisy of this Twitterati. Right. Are triggered, and I love it. I do too.
It's like, well, if you're mad because of free speech, that says more about you than it does about everybody else. So, they love it when the game is rigged only in their favor. What's the best way for people to get a hold of you if they want to reach out?
Go to twitter.com/perpetualmaniac. My DMs are open. Just hit me up. Also, I got to remind you, blast.video/support. That's where you go to support my project for free speech. It's awesome. That's the best way to get a hold of me is through Twitter and also Gab or Getter /perpetualmaniac. That's how you connect with me.
That's Zach Voorhees, everybody. He's doing the hard work so that you can have free speech. Thank this man. Thanks, Zach. You're the best. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Charlie. Take care.
And if you like this show, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family and spreading the word. We can't do this without you. Thanks, everybody. We will talk to you soon.